Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Double Play Podcast. After taking a little bit of a break, Ryan and I are back to talk some free agency recap and do some fun other segments, but we got a lot of baseball to talk about, a lot of big deals, including Aaron Judge, Jacob deGrom, Justin Verlander, Trey Turner, and many more. But without further ado, let's get into it.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Double Play. We're sort of beginning season two, I guess. We're back from our little hiatus for the end of the school year, kind of end of the season, you could say, as well. But it's been a while. I know you're finished with school. I'm still got a week of finals left, but how did the end of your semester go? And you ready to talk some baseball?
Absolutely. I think this is definitely season two of Double Play, because considering we started Double Play just about this time in the offseason last year when the lockout was still going, free agency deals were starting to roll in like Freddie Freeman to the Dodgers. So we are in season two, and I'm very glad to be done with finals. I know you just started this morning. I hope that went well, but I'm glad to be done with finals. Glad to be taking on some Christmas time. Going to watch the Heisman ceremony tonight. Both of our quarterbacks are in the Heisman ceremony, which if you told us before the year, I think we would have thought that was pretty cool. Got to rep Caleb Williams, though, as a student. But I'm excited for that. This will probably be coming out on Sunday, so you guys will know who won the Heisman Trophy. Ryan and I have to wait till 5 p.m. Pacific time tonight, but I'm very excited to talk about some of these free agents' contracts, and then also just talk with you because we haven't talked baseball in a while.
Yeah, I will say, it does look like Caleb Williams will win the Heisman, I'll give you that, but something that I get that you don't get is the semifinal, so I'll take that any day of the week, so... But yeah, I mean, you mentioned that. We always talk about college football. It's been a great year for that to talk about. But I've been missing baseball so much recently. It's just football's not doing it for me. I'm just a baseball guy through and through. So, but yeah, I'm glad we at least get some free agency news to talk about. Something to keep me over. And I feel like before you know it, it's going to be spring training, because I was thinking about going home for Christmas break next week. And then by the time I come back for Christmas break, it's like mid-January. All of a sudden, it's like 2 weeks until pitchers and catchers report. So it'll be here before you know it, and I'm excited for that.
It's 110 days away from opening day. So, and do we get the World Baseball Classic before we get the MLB season?
It's like during spring training. I think it starts like early March, maybe late February.
Because that's like a preamble to opening day, because that'll be just as exciting.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Well, do you want to get into this new segment? You came up with the idea, so I'll let you introduce it.
Yeah. So we're going to do a take it or leave it free agency recap rather than, you know, just recap the news and how everything went down. Because if you're here, I'm sure you probably all know how that went down. But we're going to kind of do forward looking on these deals that have been signed and kind of some takes based off the deal, how the deal might play out. And then we're going to either take it or leave it. And yeah, and we'll give our explain why and kind of deep dive into why we like this take or why we don't like this take, and maybe it won't happen the way you think it might happen. So let's get into this first one. The biggest deal that we saw was Aaron Judge, and that's something that we could recap kind of how things went down, because it was John Hyman, right? Yeah. Reported Arson Judge headed to the Giants. I deleted that. Said Aaron Judge headed to the Giants, and I think that lasted a full 7 minutes before he said, "Sorry, I'm wrong." Turns around, signs to the Yankees. And so this take it or leave it take is the Yankees are going to regret this Judge deal of 9 years, $360 million, paying him $40 million a year for 9 years for someone who's on the wrong side of 30.
I think that I'm going to leave it that they're going to regret the result. But I'm also going to take it, considering I think that the thing that would make them happy with the deal is winning a World Series or two with Aaron Judge. And with the way the Yankees roster is constructed right now, I'm not exactly sure that's going to happen. With how good the Astros are, with how good some other teams are becoming in the American League, and just how often the New York Yankees have disappointed in the postseason, I'm not going to say they're going to regret this just because, you know, they don't perform well as a team. But I think that there's a train of thought out there where, yeah, they would regret giving Judge 9 years for $360 million, considering that maybe on the back half of that deal or towards the latter years, he might not be as productive, and who knows if he's going to recreate this past season he had, which by all accounts and purposes might have been one of the best seasons in MLB history. I just don't know, like, I mean, Judge was so much of this Yankees offense that clearly they couldn't let him leave, which gave him such a big bargaining chip that he ended up making $140 more million than he was offered last offseason. And I think, you know, it is a lot of money, it is a lot of years. Judge, based on last year, definitely deserves it. But do I think that the Yankees, outside of Aaron Judge, are going to make the most of this contract? I'm just not all that confident in that, so I'm going to leave it that they're going to regret the deal. But then again, I also see that path where if the Yankees aren't successful in that tenure and he's not as great the last couple of years, they might regret giving him that deal. But I don't think it'll be Judge that lets down the Yankees. I think it might just be the Yankees that don't perform with Judge on their team.
Yeah, I'm gonna cheat a little on that one as well. Take it and leave it. I'm gonna take it from a team perspective. You're right. I think just the way, I mean, he's a huge guy, and as he gets to 37, 38, all the way to 40 on the back end of this deal, you're right. He might not perform, and I think it's gonna be great for the first few years, and the first few years might outweigh the back half. But the part where I'm gonna leave it is, he's going to be a franchise icon no matter how this 9 years goes. He's should be, probably will be the next captain, and he'll put butts in seats. He's going to be a fan favorite. So from the fan base and business point of view, I'm leaving this one. Like, it's going to pay out in like the first 3 weeks of the season with every game is going to be sold out cheering him on. And then, but from a team perspective, they might regret paying him this much money. But then again, it is the Yankees. We've kind of seen a trend this offseason, especially with big teams like the Yankees and the Mets, where, and even the Padres, which we'll get to a little later, but these teams are starting to be willing to spend no matter what, and that's kind of the formula we're seeing. So even if they're paying them a lot of money, as long as they're willing to spend, I don't think it'll be too big of a deal for a team like the Yankees.
Yeah, and I think it's easy to get down into the nitty-gritty of, you know, they might regret this contract down the line, but in the end, teams like this who are competing now and have the money, it's more important to get the good players on your team and worry about the financials later. Like, you're talking about a team like the Padres, who we'll mention a little later in the episode. Like, if you're contending now, you get the good players and you try and work out the financials later. That's kind of what the Dodgers have done, I think, at times. Because if you get the good players, you know, things will often work themselves out and you give yourself a chance at the postseason. And also, what we saw from the playoffs last year is that once you get to the postseason, kind of everything wipes away and it's pretty much a crapshoot. And I think that signing Aaron Judge pretty much guarantees a Yankees playoff berth in most likely all 9 years of this deal. And at that point, if you have the good players, it'll work itself out in the postseason. So I think from a team building perspective, yeah, can you look at this deal and say they might be overpaying? Yes, but also, it's kind of a guy that you're going to need to overpay for coming off the season that he had, and I'd rather have a good player on my team on a bad deal than miss out on the good player and he's out in San Francisco or in San Diego.
Yeah, and now moving on, Judge, obviously the biggest free agent who was on the market. The second biggest, arguably, was Jacob deGrom, who signed a 5-year, $105.80 million deal with the Rangers. And in his press conference, he says part of the reason he wanted to go to the Rangers was because he saw their future that they kind of pitched to him was to go win a World Series. And so that's take it or leave it. Take is the Rangers will be World Series contenders during DeGrom's 5 years. Take it or leave it.
Well, I think first of all, every team wants to win the World Series. Maybe not every team, but I think that's kind of every team's goal going into the year. But I'm going to take this, and I think that they are going to be playoff contenders in year one with Jacob deGrom and the kind of roster they're building with Corey Seager and Marcus Semien, Nathaniel Lowe. Like, that's quietly one of the better infields in baseball. I think you have some guys in the outfield, like Adolis Garcia. You've got prospects. You have already made some other pitching moves this offseason, bringing back Martin Perez and Andrew Heaney. They also had John Gray from last offseason. You add Jacob deGrom, who, while risky, is the best pitcher in baseball. I think that they can be World Series contenders in those 5 years, and I think that they inch closer to being playoff contenders this season and kind of a good start under year one. I like the Rangers as a sneaky team this year.
I guess I'll take this one for World Series contenders during the 5 years, but if this were to make a World Series or to win a World Series, I would probably leave this one. I don't think they're going to get there. I think there are too many pieces away that they have the pitching depth and prospects to kind of build a solid rotation, especially with DeGrom at the top of it for 5 years. But I think there's still a lot of holes in the lineup and in the field, and kind of lack depth in areas where that they also need to address. And obviously, I mean, we've seen these last 2 years, not afraid to spend. So if that trend continues, I could see them getting there. But the current trajectory, I'll give them a playoff run during this 5-year deal. And I guess that kind of makes you World Series contenders in a way, like you said previously. Once you get there, anyone can win it, as we saw with the Phillies this past year. But so I think they'll be up near the top of the AL West and one of the better wildcard teams when this deal is said and done. So I'm going to go ahead and take this one. They will be in the conversation for a World Series contender by the end of this 5 years.
Yeah, and I think there's a difference between, while anyone can win in the playoffs, there's a difference between making the playoffs and being a World Series contender. I think when we came in to this postseason, we really thought there were only a couple World Series contenders, being the Dodgers, the Braves, the Yankees, and the Astros. And I think that was kind of, we admitted, maybe the only ones. You could throw the Mets in there, though. I really never thought that the Mets were going to go on and fully win the World Series. And obviously, one of those teams did in the Houston Astros. But there's a difference between making the playoffs and being World Series contenders. But you give this regime 5 years with Jacob DeGrom, if he can stay healthy. And they're showing that they want to spend money. So there's a potential that they add to this roster. I think that they can be World Series contenders in the 5 years.
Absolutely, and I think one last point is I think one thing we've seen a little bit be a struggle for DeGrom and will be a very key aspect in then potentially being World Series contenders is his health, especially as he ages. He's 33, maybe 34 by now, and when he's getting up to 38, 39, is he going to be able to be the workhorse that he is when he's healthy, and is he able to even stay healthy, as we've seen kind of a little bit struggle the past two seasons? So I think that'll be a big tell in whether they're World Series contenders. And if they are, it'll be because he's healthy.
Well, and I think that even the other moves that they've made recently on the pitching front, outside of bringing back Martin Perez, who's relatively healthy, Andrew Heaney is a guy who's bounced around health-wise and team-wise, and John Gray is a guy who's always struggled with injury. So they've got three risk-reward pitchers at the top of their rotation, and you know that's something that's going to either pay off for them. If all three of them stay healthy, that's one of the better rotations in baseball. But you're also sinking a lot of money into guys who have pitched, you know, under 100 innings in recent years. So I think it's risky, but there definitely is reward there that could be found in a potential year. But I'll move on. I'll let you start on this next one. Although the Phillies got better right after this World Series run, they're still going to be third in the division next year. Take it or leave it.
I'm going to take this one. I think they will be third in the division. Even though they add Trey Turner, they get considerably better there. They add another great lineup. A guy who's serviceable defensively, that's been one of their struggles. And I just think what we've seen with the Mets, which will be our next one, is the Mets probably got better. We'll talk about that after this one. But I think it's, for the Phillies, there's just there are areas where they were struggling are still struggles, and even though they were able to get over these struggles in the playoffs this past season, I think throughout 162, as we've seen with them before, that stuff, you can't get over that stuff in a 162 game season like you can in a playoff run where you're going series to series and like, all right, screw it, let's just get through these five games or through these seven games. You can't do that over a course of 162. And we saw with the Mets getting better, even though the Braves have been quiet, they still have all those young guys extended, so the Braves didn't really need to do much, especially coming off of winning 101 games. They don't really lose out anyone outside of maybe Dansby, who's yet to sign. So I think I'm going to take this one. The Phillies are still going to be third in the division.
Yeah, I think I'm going to take it too. And what you're saying about the playoff series, I think, makes the most sense with the bullpen, where they really only threw a couple of bullpen arms during the playoffs because they knew those were their best guys. And their starters gave them some length, and they really could throw Zach Wheeler or Aaron Nola, you know, every two or three games. That's not going to be the case in the regular season, so you're not going to have as much length from your starting rotation. Despite them getting better and adding guys like Taijuan Walker and Trey Turner, you're just not going to be able to skirt around some of your bullpen issues, some of your defense issues. And I think that they got better offensively, but they were also still miles behind the Braves and the Mets in the regular season, kind of just snuck into the wild card. I think they're probably a playoff team once again. I really like the way their lineup is constructed with Trey Turner, who I've said from the start of the offseason would be a perfect fit in Philadelphia. but I still think they come in third. They'll, you know, close the gap, I think, a bit on the Mets and the Braves, and maybe the Mets and Braves don't have as great a season as they did last year, but I still think they come in third in the division.
Yeah, and I'm even going to take this one step further. I think they get the third wild card spot as once again. I definitely still think they're a playoff team. I mean, obviously, they made it last year. They get better, like we said. But if you look at the teams ahead of them, the Padres, they also got better. One of them will be the Mets or Braves, which obviously, if they're getting third in the division, they'll be behind them. And then, I mean, those are two right there. And even if the Padres go on to win the NL West, it'll be the Dodgers, which I'd take over them. So while the Phillies, I think they're going to make a playoff run, I'm still taking them to be third in the division or third in the wild card race as well.
You're missing a team.
Which is the chance to also fall out if you find a team like the Giants who somehow sneak into that third wild card, or even the Brewers, who are, Brewers, their future is very, very shaky. But they're going to be in the conversation. I think if I had to pick right now, I think the Phillies are going to get that third spot. But when you're in that third spot, there's always danger to fall out and maybe miss the playoffs, which would that would not be a pretty scene in Philly.
No, I think that with the amount of money that they sunk into Trey Turner, that would not be, the fans would not be happy about that one. But let's move on to the next one, which is the Mets, who we just mentioned. Take it or leave it, the Mets will win the National League East over the quiet Braves after replacing DeGrom with Verlander and re-signing Nimmo and Diaz.
I'm going to leave this one. It's the first one to kind of leave here. I think the Braves, even though they're quiet and they'll have a hole to fill out short if Dansby decides to leave, I've got confidence in them with what they've got in the farm system and after winning 101 games. And if you look at the Mets have been very active, but I'm not 100% confident I could say they got better. I think they're definitely at least the same. Like I said, replacing DeGrom with Verlander, you do add some age on there, but Verlander's obviously coming off a Cy Young year, whereas DeGrom was in and out health-wise, so you at least upgrade there. And then, I mean, you re-sign Nimmo and Diaz, which is two moves that I liked and thought you kind of had to make. You lose Taijuan Walker. So looking at their starting rotation, it's a little bit worse this year. I think Chris Bassitt is still a free agent. Correct me if I'm wrong there.
No, he is.
So, yeah, I think they're going to still finish short over the Braves again. We saw them at the same record this year. But I think the Braves will take this one. I rode the Braves the entire last year. You were on the Mets, and I think the Braves, early prediction, that's what I'm going with.
Yeah, I'm going to leave this one as well. I learned my lesson after last year to not ride with the Mets as much. And I think that Verlander, as of right now, is probably a more consistent upgrade over Jacob DeGrom, considering health factor. You know, although Verlander missed those 2 years, it's not the same kind of nagging stuff that DeGrom has missed time with. And you could argue that, you know, it's hard for DeGrom to be better than the season Verlander had last year, because he was just phenomenal. And then he also brings, you know, playoff pedigree, World Series pedigree. Having a 1-2 punch of Scherzer and Verlander is something the league hasn't seen since they were both in Detroit, which is kind of crazy. They both ended up on the Mets. But I think that Verlander is potentially an upgrade. I like bringing back Nimmo and Diaz. I thought that Nimmo was kind of a necessary re-sign for the Mets. Bassett's still out there on the market. They lost Taijuan Walker, so I still think they have, you know, one or two moves to make. They did bring in David Robertson as a setup man, but he was for $10 million, so they're sinking some money in some places maybe I'm not the biggest fan of, but I still think that there's a move out there that they have to make. That being said, I think the Braves have that too, considering they haven't really spent any money this free agency. They watched Kenley Jansen leave for Boston. Dansby Swanson still out there on the market. They missed out on Jacob DeGrom, which people thought they were clear contenders for. So they're clearly willing to spend some money. And I'm just kind of waiting for that shoe to drop to see who the Braves bring in, because I don't think that they're going to go all offseason without making a move. They're either going to bring Dansby back or add someone else. I thought it would be Xander Bogaerts, but we'll see where the Braves turn. I still think they win the division, because I just don't think the Mets got, you know, enough better, and I've learned my lesson from last year.
Yeah, I think we will at least see a tight race again from this division. Like I said, neither of them have really gotten considerably better. Where even though the Mets were more active than the Braves, I think they needed to be a little bit more. So we'll see how it plays out. I think it'll be a tight race, but we're both taking the Braves in this one. The next one, another division race. This one's the Padres are going to win the NL West, take it from the Dodgers, after Xander's 11-year, $280 million deal to be their shortstop are the Padres going to win the NL West, take it or leave it?
I mean, you kind of have to leave it. I know that they beat the Dodgers in the postseason, but outside of that, the Dodgers have really dominated the Padres for a long time, and the Dodgers, outside of a crazy 107-win season by the Giants, have completely run the NL West, and they got their payback in the postseason after losing out the division 2 years ago. I just don't think that the Padres will have the consistency to beat the Dodgers, who know what it takes to win the division. They've done it for so many years in a row, and while the Dodgers haven't made their move yet this postseason, I think it's still out there, whether they bring in Carlos Rodon or Kodai Senga, maybe they sign Chris Bassitt, or they trade for Corbin Burns, they make some other move. The Dodgers are going to do something, and I'm just waiting for that shoe to drop as well. But, you know, I think it's an easy leave for me because we just haven't seen it from the Padres over a full 162-game season. You do get Xander, you're going to get Tatis back at some point this year, you would assume, but I just don't think that they have what it takes to beat the Dodgers over a full season.
I think as we stand right now with the way these two rosters look, I'm taking this one. I think the Padres will go out and win the NL West based off how the Dodgers look right now. They've lost Trey Turner. They lost Cody Bellinger. Justin Turner is still on the market. They have a lot of question marks with this team in the outfield, at shortstop, just really around the infield. They need to add probably one more starting pitcher. I don't think they need to. They probably should, and they probably will. So I think by the time we get to opening day, this might change. I think we are still yet to see what the Dodgers are to do. But if going into opening day, these rosters look like this, I'm taking the Padres to win the NL West. And I think the Padres, kind of shifting gears here, Padres are in a very interesting situation where they're at right now. Because Manny Machado has an opt-out after this season, this coming season. So he can opt out if he wants to. You got Juan Soto, who's going to be a free agent at the end of next 2024.
2025. Yeah.
So 2024. And now you got Xander and Tatis. I don't know if they're in a position battle or if Tatis is moving to the outfield.
They came out and said, I believe, that Xander's going to stick at shortstop. Manny will play third. Ha-Sung Kim will move over to second with Cronenworth playing first because they didn't really have a first baseman after Josh Bell left. And then Tatis is going to go to right field with Grisham in center. And then I would assume they still have to add a left fielder because Profar's out on the free agent market. Oh, yeah, Juan Soto would. I don't really know where you're playing. Where you're playing Tatis or Juan Soto. I thought I saw it come out that they were going to play Tatis in right, but then I don't know if you trust Soto in left.
Tatis, my guess is Tatis is a hybrid in left, center, and DH a little bit. Mm-hmm. What we see him there, I mean, that's a lot of money you're paying for someone who's got some uncertainty behind him with obviously the PED situation, and then someone who won't have a kind of a defined position. We'll see if he can kind of hold down the outfield. We saw a little bit of struggles last season, or was it two seasons ago? Whenever he attempted to play there. So, I mean, the Padres, I feel like it can change, but you're kind of looking at a win now mentality and kind of the way this roster is built. So I could see them going all in and going to try and win the NL West this season. And I think it could happen with the way these rosters are constructed.
I have a couple questions for you. Do you think that the Padres' willingness to spend so much money and offer Trey Turner a deal that would make him the highest paid shortstop in baseball when they have the highest paid shortstop in baseball right now, and then bringing in Xander, tells you anything about what they think about Fernando Tatis maybe off the field or his availability this season? And then also, you know, are you a fan of how recklessly they're spending their money, offering $400 million to Aaron Judge, giving Xander an 11-year deal at age 30 worth $280 million, when they've got a couple $300 million contracts on the books, when they've got two $100-plus million pitching contracts on the books, and Yu Darvish and Joe Musgrove? What do you think?
I think it's clear that there's some distrust and kind of some animosity between the Padres and Tatis for starters, and it's kind of sends the message they didn't want him to be their shortstop, because I mean, I know he's suspended, but he's only missing, I think it's 13 games I think is the number. So I mean, you could go and play Ha-Sung Kim there, and you have your highest paid Tatis shortstop who you gave that ridiculous extension to last year. So obviously, between the decision for the surgery, going back a couple years, the motorcycle crash that he was in, and then the PEDs, there's clear that there's a little bit of bad blood and animosity between those two sides, which is why they went to try and get Trey Turner, why they went and got Xander Bogaerts. And I think this obviously leaves them at a very interesting situation. It's like you said, if Machado opts in, you probably won't pay Juan Soto and you'll let him walk. And even if he opts out with Tatis and Xander Bogaerts and Joe Musgrove, will they even try and pay Juan Soto then? So it's very interesting to see what this team does. And I think their willingness to spend shows a little bit of a distrust there. But they're also recognizing that, like I said, things can go south pretty quickly with other than Xander and Tatis and Joe Musgrove a little bit, who's got, I think, 4 years left. I think he signed a 5-year, $100 million deal. So, you've got a little bit of certainty there with the ace, but beyond those three guys, there is the possibility for a lot of roster turnover within the next few seasons. So I think their willingness to spend is partially due to the Tatis situation and partially due to they want to win now, and they think they can win now, obviously, going to spend, and this is their window.
Yeah, I think the explanation I've seen, because I was just shocked that they had this kind of money to throw around. The explanation I've seen is, okay, but they expect Machado to opt out after this year. And I'm just kind of confused by that, because Manny Machado's been their best player since they signed him to that deal. And I think if you were to tell me that if Machado opts out and you're left with Bogaerts and Soto, would you rather, of all these three players, have a combination of Bogaerts and Soto, Machado and Soto, or Bogaerts and Machado? I think I'd instantly say that I think Machado and Soto are the two best players in that deal. When and if Machado opts out, he probably will get a deal that is a similar amount of money with less years to Xander Bogaerts. You might have to pay some more AAV, considering you're not going to be throwing 11 years on a deal for Manny Machado. I think I'd rather let him opt out and then talk with him about a contract to bring back Machado. You don't have the $280 million from Bogaerts on the books, and if you can find a way to bring back Machado and Soto, that might be better for the Padres' future, in my opinion. So I think it's easy to say for the Padres and for fans paying attention that, okay, but they expect Machado to opt out, so he'll be off the books. But I don't think they're realizing, just how good of a player they might be losing out on if Manny Machado walks in free agency. An NL MVP finalist this year. He's been a leader in that franchise. He's kind of turned around his, I don't know what you would call it, but some personal issues that a lot of people have had with Machado for being maybe too fiery a competitor or being dirty or anything like that. Like, he's turned that around in San Diego. He's a face of your franchise with Fernando Tatis. So, I think it's easy to say while they expect his money to be off the books next year, I don't know if that's the best decision. And I think the Padres being maybe a little bit too reckless to go all in right now and jeopardize their future with a bunch of young talent that they could continue to play well in the future, especially for a guy in Xander Bogaerts who already on the wrong side of 30. You're giving him an 11-year deal for a shortstop who already isn't the best defender, going into a league next year that's not going to be able to have the shift, and great defense at important positions like shortstop is going to be crucial. I think they maybe should have just stuck it out with Ha-Seong Kim, maybe signed some smaller free agents after missing out on Judge and Trey Turner, and then tried to work it out with Manny Machado if he opts out next offseason. Because I think the roster is good enough if Tatis comes back with Soto and Machado and Musgrove and Darvish and all these great players that they have to make it work either way.
There's another option I could see is, if Machado does walk, like you said, it'd probably be in their best interest to do what they can to keep him. But if he does walk and goes to a new team, maybe you see a Xander Tatis left side of the infield, one of them moving to third base. So I think that's another possibility. But one thing's for certain is there's a lot of uncertainty in San Diego, and that's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. But for this year, they have a chance to win the NL West.
Yeah, I think they've got a chance, but I'll leave that take. Let's do one more. The Cardinals are legit World Series contenders. Take it or leave it.
I'm going to leave it. It's very close for me. I think where their faults lie are still in the pitching staff, and it's still Waino as your ace and Miles Michaelis at the top. I don't think I'm forgetting anyone. I just don't think that's a World Series contending starting rotation, and you get much better on the offensive side. You add Contreras to a lineup of already Goldschmidt, Arenado, and some of those young pieces who have performed throughout their lineup. But I think the starting pitching will hold them back from being legit World Series contenders right now. and they're clear-cut favorites to win the NL Central again this season. But for World Series contenders, I'm going to have to leave this one.
Yeah, going into the offseason, when I did my free agency predictions, I had them signing Carlos Rodon. And I think a move like that on the pitching side is what would potentially push them into that World Series contenders category. But without that, I just don't think I can put a team in that category without having some top-tier starting pitchers, which is what the Cardinals have been lacking for a couple of years now. And while it wasn't the starting pitching that kind of undid them in the wild card against the Phillies, they just clearly didn't have that same kind of ravenous energy that the Phillies did. And if you don't have, you know, a great starting rotation with a lockdown bullpen and a murderer's row of a lineup, you need that fire and passion. And it's just something I didn't see from St. Louis. And so unless they add, I like the Contreras move, but unless they add, you know, a big pitcher, I think that I'm most likely going to leave them out of World Series contender status. But there's a lot of moves that we could talk about. I think we're best off, since most people have already heard about them, to leave those until our offseason reviews for every team, which is a series that we're going to get started once Ryan comes back from school. We're going to be able to recap each division kind of in a single episode and talk about the five teams, the best moves that they made in the offseason, maybe some of the moves we didn't like as much, and then where we see them going into next year. But are there any other small moves you need to talk about, you want to talk about right now, or do you want to move to our final closing segment?
I don't think one thing is Jose Abreu to the Astros, which made a World Series team even better. So I feel like outside of that, I just want to highlight that I think obviously the Astros, fresh off winning a World Series, one of their weaknesses was first base, and now they had a former MVP and Jose Abreu. So I think that was one I really liked for the Astros, and it definitely puts them as World Series favorites once again to a lineup that was already ridiculous.
Yeah, you know, you lose Justin Verlander, which is, you know, it's a hit to your pitching rotation, but you still got Framber Valdez, Christian Javier, started a no-hitter in the World Series, and that was the only time he pitched in that series. You've got Luis Garcia. You've got arms in that rotation, and you just know the Astros are going to find guys to fill out. But it is tough losing your Cy Young winner. That being said, I'm not sure who's going to compete with them in the AL West, so I think they're in the playoffs, and they got a good chance to go back-to-back, and I think Abreu is a good move. I've called him overrated in the past. Last season, he had a really great year, so I'm kind of off that train so far.
Yeah, it makes them a much better team and a legit World Series team once again. And even losing Verlander, they're going to be up at the top of that division and top of the American League again.
All right. Do you want to introduce our draft?
So we've got another draft. We've had these in the past, little fun drafts. This one is, we're going to be drafting attractive MLB players, just objectively attractive men. Jack, I'll let you take the first overall pick.
So I had a couple guys that I was deciding on for my first overall pick, determining whether I was going to have it or not. But I'm going to start it out with former Chicago Cub, former San Francisco Giant, and now Colorado Rocky, Chris Bryant.
Great, great pick. Number one on my board. I mean, he's going to hold down that lineup. Clear-cut number one overall pick. Coming in at two, I feel like I got to go to a guy who's a free agent, Dansby Swanson. I feel like Just an attractive man.
He's got the second best hair in baseball. That's what I'll say. I think for my second pick, I have to pick a guy that I think you maybe jumped the gun on taking Dansby over. I'm going to go Brandon Crawford, hometown kid, San Francisco Giant. He's got the best locks in baseball. You know, he's a little older than Dansby now, but he's got that dad energy, and I think he's, you know, got the better hair, so I'm going to go with him at my second overall spot to pair him with Chris Bryant.
You know, he wasn't even on my board. I wasn't going to take Brandon Crawford there. I think the hair is a little overrated for me. Number two, and I'm glad I did not take him one, Corey Seager. I'm taking Corey at number two. He was on the top of my board, right behind Chris Bryant. I ended up going Dansby as my first. I'm just glad I was able to keep him at two.
You know, I think that's a little personal bias speaking out. Yes. Yeah, not on my board at all. I don't like that pick one bit. I am going to, you know, I'm gonna level down with a big tier free agent in this draft. I'm taking Aaron Judge at number three. 6'5", all the ladies love him. I'm going Aaron Judge.
You know, I simply don't like that one. And no hate, but did you see that? Was it the Times Magazine Athlete of the Year cover that did him so dirty? He did not look good on that cover. Yeah,
this is easy for us to say sitting behind our cameras, but I like Aaron Judge. You know, I'm going off the, you know, female opinion, where I feel like Aaron Judge, one of the most beloved players in all of baseball. He's very tall, so the ladies love that too. So it influenced my decision for Brandon Crawford as well, my girlfriend's favorite player. So, you know, I had to do some scouting with the other gender to see, you know, who they thought was the most attractive.
All right, coming in at my number three, I've got I took like 20 players on this board, but you're going off my board here, so I've got a lot to pick from. I'm going to go a guy who I do think has the best hair in baseball, Bryce Harper, coming in at number three. Another, I thought that's where you were going with that one, but once you said big time free agent, I knew Harper was safe. Harper at my number three.
Harper was eight on my board. I can appreciate the hair game. He's got that intensity, that fire in his eyes. So I appreciate the Harper pick, just a little too far down my board. I'm going to go with a flyer, not, you know, the best player in baseball by any means, but a player that I think deserves to be on this list, and you might have to look him up. I'm going to go Max Kepler, you know, right fielder for the Minnesota Twins. That's a steal at the fourth pick, I'll tell you right now.
You know, I came across him in my research of who I wanted to go with on this board. He was considered, but he was left off my board, so another opening for me. Coming at my number four, I'm going to go with the guy who just signed, like just this morning, right before we got on this.
I know who this is, yeah.
I'm going with Kevin Kiermaier. He just signed with the Blue Jays. I'm taking him at my number four. Attractive man.
That makes my pick a little bit easier, because I was deciding between Kiermaier. I had Kiermaier and Bryant kind of right on that same tier because they look very similar. So I was like, which one of those am I going to take with my first overall pick? But now that Kiermaier's off the board, I'm going to round this out with the best smile in baseball. In Queens, I'm going to go Francisco Lindor. He's got the hair. He's got the bling. He's got the pop. I'm going to go Francisco Lindor. I think that's a great late round pick.
You know, I thought about him, but it's just the hair doesn't do it for me. I don't like the dyed colored hairs, but I'll give you the smile on that one. So rounding out my list, I'm choosing between a couple here. I'm going to go with Jacob DeGrom. I feel like if you add a face of all these guys, it's clear I got a type. but I can't believe I just said that. Jacob DeGrom.
So, I guess, I mean, we never really set a limit. If you got that many players on your board, we can go to like seven.
Keep going.
We can keep going. All right, yeah.
Who are you taking at six then?
I'm going to take Aaron Nola at six. Another one of my girlfriend's favorites. He's not, you know, as much of that hot, but we weren't going for hot. We're going for attractive. I think he's a lovable dude. He's a great father figure. Aaron Nola, I think he's got what the ladies like.
All right. Then going on my six, I'm going to go off of my type here. I'm going with Ronald Acuna here at six. I feel like wasn't enough to make my top five, but I'll throw him a bone here if we're expanding. All
right. To round it out at my number seven, I'm going to go with a dude who's attractive enough to be compared to probably the most attractive superhero, and that's Noah Syndergaard. You talk about hair, you got to include Thor, and I'm going to take him at number seven. You know, he's not maybe past his glory days a little bit when he was on the Mets. You know, he was one of the marquee figures in baseball, especially that hair, but I'm going to go with Thor at pick seven.
I'm going to go with the best player in baseball, Mike Trout, to round it out, and we're running out of time here, but Jack, just go ahead and take us home real quick. You're good at this.
Thank you guys for watching. Let us know who you think the hottest player in baseball is and who won our draft. And then let us know, are you going to take or leave some of those takes that we had earlier in the episode? Socials above us, our socials down below. Thank you so much for tuning in. We will see you next time.